Welcome to the Success in Medicine podcast. I'm Dr. Rajani Katta, author of the best-selling residency match guide, The Successful Match, and creator of the Residency Interview 101 course. This is a special series on the podcast called Energized at Work. We hear so much about burnout in medicine, and it is a real and very challenging problem. That's why I wanted to learn from doctors in all types of specialties who are the opposite of burned out. These are the doctors who are energized by work. I'm looking forward to sharing lessons and secrets from these doctors on this special series. I'm so excited to be here. I'm with Dr. Brett Perkison, one of my colleagues, longtime colleagues, and occupational medicine physician and residency program director. And Dr. Perkison, I'm going to just start with a very basic question, which is tell me about what you do now and how you got there, what your career path was.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you for inviting me to be part of your program, Dr. Katta. I'm glad to be here. So my current position is at the University of Texas School of Public Health, and I have really three different positions right now. I'm in clinical practice at the University of Texas Employee Health Clinic, where I see primary care patients, and I also see the employees of UT Health and other companies that come in for work-related injuries and illnesses. And so this enables me to really clinically see the types of patients that I trained for, which was I completed residencies in family medicine and occupational and environmental medicine. The other parts of my week are, as you mentioned, I'm a program director, so I am involved in recruiting and ensuring the clinical competence of residencies in occupational and environmental medicine. I teach a number of different classes, clinical occupational medicine, a field trips class where we go out to different industries and see how people enact health systems within industry. And then lastly, research. I'm on several different grants as a primary investigator and co-investigator on research, primarily in the areas of diabetes prevention programs at the work site and trying to increase attendance in those programs. And the other is in disaster response, working with construction workers that go into areas that have been flooded or in wildfires, and I'm developing an e-learning app for them to help them in training and also with logistics whenever they go into the area. So a nice variety.
Wow. Okay, so that's amazing because you're doing exactly what you train for with the occupational medicine piece of it. But then you've really gone in these very interesting directions of education and then your research about, boy, disaster relief and workers in those settings. How did you get to this part where you're doing all of these cool things?
Well, it's something that I've worked towards. I completed my occupational medicine training in 2003. And really, you finish up with a master's in public health as well as a board certification, but you're not really completely prepared to go into research, to have the upper level statistics, the epidemiology classes. And so that really was something that I acquired over the years. When I got out of residency, I worked at Harris Health for a number of years with underserved populations, both in primary care and occupational care. And then I worked for Shell Oil for 5 years and then came back to Baylor. And all that time I was developing research programs, writing papers on the side, sort of building up my credentials so that I could come back to the School of Public Health and really do that like I had seen my mentors of that kind of combination of education, research, and clinical practice that I thought was just, you know, would be really appealing to me. It always was. And the last 7 years have shown that to be true. I've really, really enjoyed that balance.
And that's fascinating. And I think two aspects of it are really fascinating to me. One is that I think a lot of students, when they think about graduating from residency, they think that, you know, you find a position, you find maybe the perfect job, and then you work for a long time in that one job. And then the other piece of it that I find fascinating is that I think there's also this idea that if you're going to do research, if you're going to be a residency program director, that maybe
you need to be in that pathway right from the get-go. So I think there's two really interesting parts here. One is that your pathways have sort of branched into multiple areas, but also that you didn't necessarily start out with that. So I think that's really interesting. What did you plan on all of this right from the get-go when you graduated from your residency and from your fellowship?
Yes, I mean, I have to say I did. You know, the easiest route for me to get there would have gotten to do an MD PhD program, you know, where I went to school in Galveston. They at UTMB, they had a program where you would do your basic sciences year in medical school. Then you went off and you got your PhD, your doctorate, your dissertation. You came back and finished up your clinical years in medical school. And that's a nice, pretty straightforward pathway. I wasn't sure enough of my steps, you know, at that stage in my career to do that. I wasn't sure that's really what I wanted to do. And so I went with the straight MD route. But you know, the interest in research, the interest in trying to develop innovative new solutions to medicine, and the freedom to do sort of the areas of research interest that I wanted never really left me. And I wasn't quite willing to go and stop practicing medicine and get a PhD. I, you know, part of it was financial, supporting a family, all those things. I was the primary breadwinner in my family. To do that seemed like too much of a sacrifice, if you will, at the stage of my career. I'd also done 3 years in the military as a general medical officer. So I did it, you know, sort of a hands-on approach. And so I was always kind of working for that. I was always looking for opportunities. And that's why right after residency, I worked at Baylor. You know, a lot of positions when you get out of medical school and residency are maybe in academics, but they're clinical positions. So they're still very much expected to generate your income through clinical practices. And that's very challenging to try to have a full research career, because it really is a commitment. And so it was as a result, sort of the slow approach to write enough papers, to have done enough research that I was able to be a viable candidate for a faculty. But you know, the nice thing about having done it that way is that I've got a lot of practical knowledge, and I feel like I bring that to the projects that I'm involved in. There's a lot of clinical research that goes into place like this diabetes prevention program that I mentioned, where you're trying to improve referral rates to these programs, and having an intimate knowledge of how a clinic works and some of the issues, you can tell full-time academic researchers that, you know, never really worked in a clinic, you know, I think this will work. I don't think this will work. We need to adjust this. And so although it's been long, it's been very, I feel like it makes me very productive. So regardless of your choice, you know, to students, I would say if you're in a clinical practice right out of residency and you still have kind of that bug to do research or to teach, that to stick with it, and there are a lot of opportunities, which I can elaborate on, for you to get involved with research kind of on the side to get your credentials up to where you can get to that position that you want.
Well, your position is really, I think, unique, but I want to step back for just a moment and tell me a little bit about occupational medicine in general. How does a student get to occupational medicine, and what are some of the different areas that they can go into once they finish that residency or that fellowship, rather?
Yeah, so occupational medicine is a branch, one of three subspecialties within preventive medicine, which is aerospace, general preventive medicine, and occupational environmental medicine. We receive our certifications by the American Board of Preventive Medicine, and it is a specialty of about 4,000 specialists across the country. So it's small, but it has a strong showing here in the U.S. And I think of occupational medicine as really public health for a particular employer. So if you pick any particular company, the employees in that company have their own unique risks. And so here in Houston area, in the petrochemical industry, it's pretty easy to see that chemical workers in manufacturing plants are exposed to 20, 30,000 chemicals that we have to take precautions against. But that's really true of any industry. People that go outside in the heat and have to climb up towers with heat stress is a big factor. The pandemic, all that requires really public health experts within a company to decide how am I going to keep my employees safe? And so that's how it came about. To be eligible for that, you need to have completed medical school, completed an intern year, in a clinical specialty, really anything, transitional, primary care, and then you apply for our residency programs in your for a PGY2 position after that intern year. And the residency program is 2 years. The first year is a PGY2. You get a master's in public health, and you take a lot of classes like epidemiology and biostats and toxicology, a little bit of qualitative analysis, really the basic toolkits for you to function in the environment. And then the last year of your residency, the PGY3 residency, is much like kind of a typical residency that you might think. Each month you rotate in a different location. And so residents get a chance to see corporate environments, large corporate environments, like we have rotations at Shell and Dow Chemical, but we also have occupational medicine clinics. And so you can get sort of one-on-one experience with seeing and treating patients. One of the things that you can do when you get out, there is a variety of different positions, and it is a very, I would say, very rewarding career. Our residents get asked for jobs, 9 months before they graduate. They're getting job offers, and you can do a variety of things within the field. You can, if you really like patient care, you can see one-on-one patient care for, again, work-related injuries, accidents. There's a lot of clinics like that. You can set up your own private practice. But if you also have an interest in prevention of those illnesses, then you can get a job where you're working for a large company or you're a consultant for a large company, where you design programs and surveillance, where you're evaluating employees to make sure that they're not getting overexposed to a particular chemical or risk. And so you're very much integrated in with engineers and operational people, and you're a very trusted member of that group, because both emerging threats as well as kind of recurrent threats are always present. And of course, the easiest example is COVID-19, trying to decide, should people work from home? What should you do if you've got COVID-19? When should you return to work? All these really require good clinical knowledge that the rest of the people in the industry look to you. And it can be really rewarding because you're not only treating kind of things after the fact, but you're preventing them through these designing projects.
Okay, amazing. And then your career path, where you've also incorporated research and teaching, I guess those are other pathways that students can head towards.
That's right. Right now, there are 23 accredited occupational environmental medicine residencies across the United States, and they all need program directors as part of that. They all have other faculty members that are involved in teaching. And then research in the area of occupational environmental illnesses is very much needed. Every time we have a new industry or a new development, those developments incur risks to human health. And so you can think of a person working in the Amazon warehouse, or you can think of somebody climbing up a ladder to fix windmills, as an example of sort of emerging technologies. All those need somebody to think through how do we screen people to make sure that they're healthy? What can we do to improve their health?
Okay, that is just fascinating. When I think about this, because you're absolutely right, like all of these new emerging technologies, and I'm thinking about semiconductor manufacturing coming back to the US, boy, there's a lot to have to think about proactively. And just to clarify, because I guess I didn't, there are now, when you're talking about the residency and PGY2, PGY3, when you finish that residency, are you then, have you finished a residency preventive medicine and then you need to go on to get further training in occupational medicine? Or do you apply straight to occupational medicine residency?
That's right. You can apply, if you finish you can apply for occupational medicine residency really when you're in your PGY 1 year, your intern year. And then when you complete the 2 year residency, you're eligible to take the boards in occupational medicine that fall. And so you are done with your training. There are subspecialties like everything else within preventive medicine that you can take, and I'd be happy to talk about those. But yeah, you can hang out your shingle and do that. A lot of people come into occupational medicine mid-career. Despite our best efforts, still most medical students haven't heard of it. Or when we're in medical school and we're wanting to choose our career, we think about medicine in the clinic. We don't think of it in terms of project development. And so people kind of come into that sometimes later in their career. So it's not uncommon to have mid-career folks. Having a full residency like myself in family medicine or internal medicine is useful because you can jump between those fields, but it's not necessarily required.
Okay. And when you were talking about preventive medicine as a residency, so occupational medicine is its own residency?
That's right. It's its own residency. You can think of it as simply like internal medicine has got cardiology and pulmonology, endocrinology, you know, sort of. And so you think of the same thing with occupational medicine and aerospace medicine and general preventive medicine. They're all three separate residency pathways with three separate curricula and three separate boards. So yes, it is its own residency specialty.
Oh, okay, great. And if you had advice for students who were seeking out this residency, how would they learn more about it?
I would first of all look at our college's website, the American College of Occupational and Environmental Medicine, and it's got a great website and it lists the residency programs. It gives you an idea about what residents curriculum to look at that. You can also look at the American Board of Preventive Medicine, which talks about what the test is like for occupational medicine. So it has a nice kind of a summary of all the different subjects that they have. You can also contact a staff member at ACOM, and they could put you in touch with a physician like myself that could kind of talk to you about it as well. And then by all means, contacting a program director of a local program near you is advisable. And I'm always talking to people, to students about that. To go a step further, I would encourage them to seek out local occupational medicine practitioners through that ACOM website and spend a day with these occupational medicine doctors and kind of see what kind of patients they see and what their day's like give you a good idea of the specialty.
That's fantastic advice. And for our listeners, I'll go ahead and link to the websites that Dr. Perkison is mentioning. And I also want to ask you a question because I have a saying for myself that I love my work, but I don't always love my job. Because I love the work of speaking to patients one-on-one, but I don't really love data entry and medical codes and all that. And so I imagine that there's the same in occupational medicine. What would you say that you love about your work, but you don't necessarily love about your job?
Well, I really, ever since I first got into medicine, I've really had a penchant for prevention. I always, when I was on the floor and I was looking at patients with complications from diabetes or hypertension. And my first reaction is, wow, you know, if we could have just caught this person 30 years earlier and done something about it. And this field gives me an opportunity to do that. A lot of times workers aren't the same people that come to the clinic. So a lot of times you're reaching out to a population that never comes into a clinic. And through your interaction with them and gaining their trust, a lot of times you're the only healthcare person that they may know. You can pick up on the hypertension, the diabetes early. You can prevent a worker from hurting themselves. You can really do a lot of good in that. And that I really enjoy that. And I, as you can see by my job, I enjoy variety. I love the one-on-one in the clinic, but I also love a project design. I like interacting with people from other disciplines to create kind of a unified project. All those things, if that resonates with any of your audience, then you, I would seriously think about doing this. I also like the fact that we're always looking at emerging technologies, emerging things. It's both occupational and environmental. So there is a component of not only exposures at the workplace, but exposures to the community and to the world. And so we have a large contingent of us here that are interested in issues like climate change and reducing carbon emissions. And all that's within the purview of the field. And that really gives me a lot of satisfaction. Issues that sometimes about the job. So that one of the things is it's sort of two different sides of the same coin. Is a lot of times when you're in a position working in a company, you have the employers that are wanting the worker to get back to work and not have an injury and be well, and you have the employees which are sometimes injured or they don't feel like they can go back to work, and so you're a lot of times kind of in the middle there. And I actually enjoy that. I feel like I'm an advocate for the employee to the employer, and sometimes I'm an advocate for the employer to the employee. I'm sort of trying to kind of bridge that gap. I enjoy kind of that milieu, and it feels like it tests my clinical skills. But it can be challenging at times too, because you are kind of in the middle of things. The workers' comp system is, you know, a lot of people in medicine kind of the hair on the back of their neck goes up when they hear that. It's one that is, workers' comp is not as bad as some people think. It's really I think the issue with workers' comp insurance is that it requires people to manage. You've got to manage the case. You've got to, and as I mentioned, manage the employer and the employee. And so it's a different kind of case management than what people are used to. But it like anything else, getting approvals for this and that, approvals for physical therapy, things of that nature that, and I think my other colleagues experience, you know, it has its share, a share of that as well. Those are probably the two big points I would say about the field that sometimes it makes you glad to be at the end of the day.
So for our listeners, you know, Dr. Perkison and I have worked together for years, and that's one of the reasons I was so excited to invite him on, because I think his career trajectory is so fascinating and so interesting. I have an interest in occupational dermatology, and that's how he and I had connected. And I think it's really fascinating, some of the publications and the writings that that you've been working on, Dr. Perkison, with sustainability in medicine, that I read what you wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine, and then some of your research work after Hurricane Harvey, which really devastated Houston. So I think what you said is really interesting about how, you're on the cutting edge of emerging technologies and how that's affecting health and emerging occupations as well. So just, for our listeners, what sort of interests you or what excites you coming up next in your career or for your projects?
Yeah, so I guess all of the above that you had just mentioned. Regarding our program, I feel like our residency program is growing, is stronger. During COVID-19, a lot of our rotations had to be kind of pared back. And so now that we're coming out of that, we're getting stronger than ever, and our residents get opportunities to rotate in just a variety of different exciting different fields and get exposure to that. And so we had a very strong match. In my research career, we're entering the phase where we're actually going to be testing this app that I've been working on with construction workers. There's a worker advocacy group that we've partnered with called Resilience Force, and they specialize in workers that go to either wildfires or floods throughout the country. And so we're at the phase where we can actually pilot test that. And so I'm really hoping that will be a useful tool that we can really start using, and workers will be able to benefit from that. And not only workers, but really any different population that's involved in a natural disaster. And so that's exciting. Within my own organization, UT Health, I've started a sustainability committee as part of our health and safety group. And as you've mentioned, the healthcare industry in the U.S. alone counts for 12% of carbon emissions in the U.S., wow. Mostly because they're just, it's such a big industry. And so there's just so much opportunities that we as healthcare providers, we should be, in my opinion, taking the lead on this, because there are so many health effects associated with climate change, some of the ones that I just mentioned. And so I think working within the internal organization of UT Health and trying to reduce our carbon footprint from an administrative standpoint is going to be really rewarding. So they're all very slow steps. You could argue that ever since the day I finished residency has been sort of a slow progression to where I am today. And that's going to continue slowly, but we all make our contributions. So, but I'm hopeful that in the next 5 years, I'll see some of these projects I've been working on really take off.
That's fantastic. And I just have to say, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights and your background on occupational medicine, which really is a field that I think if we serve, and I don't know, have you done any of this research? Have you surveyed medical students to find out how many of them know about this residency?
Through talks, I will talk to Baylor and UT medical students in residency. And one of the first questions I ask is, how many of you all have heard of occupational medicine? And out of a class of 50 or so, maybe I'll get one or two hands. So it's something that we all in the field are sort of trying to wrestle with. How do you do that? How do you best advertise the field? And, through programs like yourself, your program and others like this, through talking, I think just sort of one day at a time, kind of getting it out there. But, it is a very rewarding field. And I will say one other aspect of this is that, my first job out of residency, within 2 years, I was the medical director of the clinic I worked at Harris Health. And I think one of those reasons is that even in non-occupational settings, our healthcare systems are moving towards population health, of trying to improve, the health of populations, not just kind of reactive treatment. And so that a master's in public health prepares you, it provides you with the skills for that, so that you can, if you enjoy healthcare system management, it helps you reach that.
Yeah, I mean, it really, it's a gem of a residency for somebody who's interested, as you said, in thinking about systems thinking. And the fact that you end with a master's of public health, I'm embarrassed to say I didn't actually realize that all of your residents have a master's of public health when they graduate. That's pretty amazing.
It really is. Before I knew about occupational medicine, I wanted to get a public health degree. I thought that would be a neat field to go into. And then somebody told me they actually pay you to get your master's in public health, as a resident. So it's neat to know about.
That's great. Well, for our listeners, I will include links in the show notes to the resources that Dr. Perkison has mentioned, as well as a link to the residency program at the University of Texas, where Dr. Perkison is residency program director of the occupational medicine residency. So thank you again, Dr. Perkison, for sharing your experience and your insights. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for having me on.